Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce to you the 55th Chief of the Los Angeles Police Department, Chief Charlie Beck.
Los Angeles finally gets its new Chief of Police. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009. I'm Pete Griffin. After a long interview process, L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa announced Deputy Chief Charlie Beck as his choice to be the next chief of the LAPD.
One wise person said to me, "Choose the man who could have reached you when you were 17. Choose the man who you think can change the course of a young person's life." Charlie Beck is that man. Thank
you, sir. The mayor cited Beck's long service in the LAPD, where he officially joined the force in 1977. Villaraigosa said Beck has served all over the city and spent a good amount of time in the most challenging areas of LA. The mayor also described the decision as difficult and said that any one of the three final candidates would be a great leader. The other two candidates were First Assistant Chief Jim McDonnell and Deputy Chief Michael Moore. Stay tuned for more on the mayor's choice later in the show. A routine police stop in South Los Angeles turned dangerous today. Neela Jamie was there and has this report.
A police chase and standoff in South Los Angeles this morning ended with the driver sustaining the only reported injuries. The incident began around 10 a.m. when police stopped a car that may have been involved in a carjacking. The car didn't stop and two men fled. The driver kept going for 17 blocks before the car stopped on Avalon Boulevard and 59th Street. The driver began shooting at police and officers quickly returned fire. Between 50 to 70 police vehicles and SWAT units surrounded the car. They were able to obtain the suspect's handgun with a police robot. The suspect was arrested and taken to the hospital for multiple gunshot wounds. There's no word on his condition. Neela Jamie, Annenberg Radio News.
The County Board of Supervisors approved a $10,000 reward today for information in the shooting death of 16-year-old Melody Ross. Ross was killed Friday outside her high school football stadium in Long Beach. She was leaving a Woodrow Wilson High School football game when 5 to 7 shots were fired into a crowd. Voters across the country went to the polls today. Albert Sabate has a story on an election day that's being closely watched by political observers.
Some are calling this a referendum on President Barack Obama's first year. Obama has campaigned hard for Democrats to keep the governors of Virginia and New Jersey blue. But in Virginia, Republican candidate Bob McDonnell is leading Democrat candidate Cray Deeds in the exit polls. And the race in New Jersey between incumbent Democrat John Corzine and Republican challenger Chris Christie is neck and neck. Maine is voting on a measure to repeal a bill allowing same-sex marriages. So far, it's also too close to call. Albert Sabate, Annenberg Radio News.
California lawmakers are scrambling today to secure votes for a set of bills that address California's water problems. The bill's passage looks shaky as legislators continue to disagree on key elements. The Senate did pass a $10 billion bond package for new dams yesterday, but two companion bills, including one for a statewide groundwater monitoring system, didn't get enough votes. A fire ignited near the 60 Freeway in Diamond Bar this afternoon. Ontario and Chino Fire Department sent 300 firefighters, 2 planes, and 4 helicopters to fight the fire. Police believe the fire may have been started by sparks from an overheated converter on a truck. 4 people were treated for smoke inhalation. Now to weather. Tonight, skies will be mostly clear with a low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow, it's expected to be partly cloudy with a high of 78 degrees and a low again of 57. Thursday will be partly cloudy with a high of 72 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll explore USC President Stephen Sample's legacy on the community around the university as he nears retirement. Manuel Arts High School hosted a forum today on the link between poor mental and health and dropout rates. Researchers are urging schools to take more interest in the mental and physical health of their students. Ashley Ragavan reports.
60% of California 11th graders believe that none of the adults in their lives have high expectations for them. 66% said they feel no sense of connection to their schools.
To just have kids feel like it's important for them to be at school, that people acknowledge their existence.
That's Cecilia Echevarria. She spoke on behalf of the California Endowment, a key funding resource for programs that aim to improve health in schools.
Even those levels of meaningful contact can really make the difference in a child that may be struggling at home, may be struggling in their community, but feel like they do have sort of a safe haven in the school environment.
But having a healthy student body doesn't just mean chasing away the flu and handing out aspirin in the nurse's office. Greg Austin, the director of Health and Human Development Program at WestEd, agrees that schools can play a more comprehensive role.
They focus on curriculum and instruction, and they're not looking at these underlying non-academic barriers that prevent kids from really being ready and able and motivated to learn.
And the cost of these health-related absences? Around $670 million tax dollars over the course of one school year. That's according to research conducted by the Philip R. Lee Institute for Health and Policy Studies. Dr. Claire Brindis, the Institute's director, says solutions can be simple and affordable. But Brindis wants to address more than just the symptoms. She says a partnership between schools and healthcare providers is crucial to actually treating the problem.
Well, as we see the schools as being sites or places where families can sign up for health insurance, it's a very easy to, you know, service to provide when there may be families that may not be aware that they're eligible for services.
A hearing to assess the impact of student health on school performance is scheduled to take place in Hollywood on November 16th. This is Ashley Ragavan for Annenberg Radio News.
Much of the talk surrounding USC President Stephen Sample's retirement is focused on his efforts to improve the university's academics, but he is also credited with helping to kickstart community service programs. Has he done enough to improve the often strained relations between USC and the neighborhoods around it? Ariel Edwards-Levy has the story.
At the end of Stephen Sample's tenure, USC is harder to get into than ever. But there have also been changes beyond the walls of Troy. Gilbert Henschke, a USC professor, has been teaching and living in the University Park area for more than 20 years.
The oral history of when I first got here was a fair amount of distrust, or just simply foreignness between the campus and the community. And so that atmosphere has changed fundamentally, but it's changed because of what SC has done under Steve's leadership.
Henschke says that community involvement has always been present at USC, but that it's become much more organized and a bigger part of campus life.
It's not that we weren't doing tons of things before. They were just individual, scattered. There was no coherence. A lot of little teeny projects, but nothing that signaled the university's overall intention of working more closely with the community.
Beginning in the 1990s, the university has worked with 10 neighborhood schools and started the Good Neighbor Campaign, in which faculty and staff raise money for the community. USC's Director of Community Outreach, Catherine Diaz, says there was an effort to focus closer to campus.
The idea was that USC could try to serve, you know, the whole state. It could try to serve all of Southern California. It could try to serve greater LA. But it would make more impact if it would concentrate its efforts in a more narrowly defined area.
USC has been recognized often for its outreach. It was named College of the Year by Time Magazine in 2000. But some community members say it needs to do much more. Father Bill Delaney has been at St. Agnes Church on the corner of Adams and Vermont for 19 years. He also serves on USC's Master Plan Advisory Committee. He says student housing has been a major issue during Sample's tenure.
He's done a great deal for the university, and the university has contributed a lot for the community. I'm not denying that at all. But I'm just saying that I think the attempt to get additional off-campus student housing has displaced literally hundreds of families who have been here for a long time. And there has been no dialogue with the community.
Delaney says he hopes to see the next president make plans to help residents and students coexist.
People have been here for a long time, and they say they don't have any more neighbors anymore.
There will always be some tension between town and gown, USC's Catherine Diaz says. but she hopes the new president will make the community a priority.
You know, university just has a very good reputation in the academic world for doing what it does. And we hope that, you know, a sample leaving now, we hope that whoever comes in will make that same commitment.
President Sample will step down in August. Ariel Edwards Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
The 2010 FIFA World Cup will be taking place in South Africa. Guy Berger, the Dean of Journalism and Media Studies at South Africa's Rhodes University, was a guest speaker on USC's campus today. Matthew Richmond talked with him afterwards about the importance of the World Cup heading to South Africa and how journalists reporting at the event should focus on the game.
You know, a lot of the global attention is on the game. You know, who's winning, what the score is, who's putting off the greatest achievements and stuff. But there's a lot of interesting stories there. For example, the world of football is no longer national teams so easily. And, you know, sports is often, international sports is about national teams. But, you know, in football now, you've got a hell of a lot of Africans playing for other teams and Brazilians playing for other teams and so on. So this kind of like changes the nature of nationalism and sports. So that's quite interesting to sort of go into to that.
And you mentioned some of the perceptions that people have of the continent, and I'm just kind of wondering, when all this attention is put on South Africa, do you have certain concerns that the country will be looked at in certain ways that would make you cringe or make you say no, they're missing the point?
There are two very easy stereotypes that come to mind in terms of understanding Africa. The one is that it's a really dangerous, violent place and full of AIDS and animals that kill each other and so on in your backyard. And then the other stereotype is, you know, these are people who haven't been contaminated by modern stuff. They still have an intrinsic sort of sense of rhythm and humanity and so on. And it's very easy to try and read South Africa in both those terms. And both those terms make me cringe because not only South Africa, but the rest of the continent, for all its diversity, you know, there's kind of elements that feed into those stereotypes, but really, it's a far more complex situation. So I cringe when people kind of caricature, you know, reporting in Africa as if, you know, this was emblematic of, you know, say one of those two stereotypes, emblematic of how things are there, because it's not like that. It's kind of, it's different in some ways, but it's not homogenous, and it's not so different to say it's like abnormal.
I think there's a serious lack in general of reporting from Africa in American news sources, and that's why all that ever comes out are, you know, violent elections and wars and famines in general. But what do you think that a reporter should look for to try to get past those big events?
It's really easy, especially if you just parachute in, to kind of read things in terms of your prior assumptions. So you think, well, this is just confirmation of stereotype A or stereotype B. And I think as soon as you think you're a journalist and you've got the story, you need to think, hang on, let me see, what sense am I making of the story? And by no means should journalists self-censor and say, you know, we're only going to do the good stuff, we're only going to do the bad stuff, or, you know, I mean that's not what's needed. But you need journalists to begin to say, let's try and capture this thing in terms of a more nuanced understanding.
That was Guy Berger, Dean of Journalism and Media Studies at South Africa's Rhodes University. Deputy Chief Charlie Beck is now officially the mayor's selection to be the next chief of the LAPD, and he had his first chance to address the press and the public today about taking over for Chief William Bratton. Richie Duchon was there, and he has this report.
In a speech today, Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa used a sports analogy to describe his choice for the next chief of the LAPD.
Charlie Beck is the tight end you give the ball to on 3rd and 13, asking him to run down the middle, knowing he's going to get hit from every side.
Villaraigosa said Beck's 32-year career with the LAPD and his deep family ties to the department make him the best choice for the job. He praised Beck's creativity and hard work in cleaning up the Rampart Division in 2003, and he said Beck's stint as chief of the South Bureau is evidence he can connect with the community. Chief Beck took the public stage for the first time, thanking the mayor for a thorough interview process, which he called exhaustive. Beck saved a very emotional thanks for his family, calling their service the past, present, and future of the LAPD.
My father, George Beck, 30 years with the Los Angeles Police Department. After serving in World War II, he came to Los Angeles, became a police officer, rose through the ranks, eventually became a deputy chief, where he served honorably and made a difference and changed this place.
Beck recognized his daughter, who he thanked for being present after a long night patrolling in Hollywood. He joked he would try and use his sway to get her the night off. Then, fighting back tears, Beck spoke about his son.
And then the future of the department, my son. My son's in the, he's not here today because he's got to study, because he's going to graduate. He will graduate December 4th, and that will be the first graduation that I preside over if I'm confirmed by the city council.
After his emotional speech, Beck took questions from reporters, during which he spoke about what he sees as the mission of the LAPD.
Its mission is much more than just the inputs of policing. Its mission is to change communities. Its mission is to increase attendance at schools. Its mission is to make this place friendly for business. Its mission is to make this a better place to live.
While Beck was emotional and thoughtful during much of his address today, Police Protective League President Paul Weber says,
"Don't underestimate Charlie Beck. He is a tough guy. Grew up in this organization during extremely tough times, very limited resources, high crime, and he's a man of courage, and I have no doubt that he can take care of business."
UCLA professor and gang expert Georgia Leap says Beck now has four major challenges.
One is what I call the shoes challenge, and that is being the first chief after Bill Bratton and having to deal with the ongoing comparisons. Bratton did this, Bratton did that.
The other challenges, a lack of money, gangs, and the pending forced release of up to 40,000 inmates from the state's prisons. But today, Beck was talking from the heart and thinking big.
I have a phrase that I use, and I want to share it with you. And you will recognize some of the facets from it. Some of it comes from Bill Bratton. Some of it comes from Mayor Villaraigosa. Some of it comes from Charlie Beck. And that is that cops count, character counts, do the right thing, and you can be the difference.
Richie Dushan, Annenberg Radio News.
An example of the new community-friendly LAPD is the series of town hall meetings with the new police chief. Charlie Beck will appear at the first one a few minutes from now to talk with residents of South LA. We want to hear what some of the people at the event want from the new chief.
They tease me about crying, but unfortunately I deal in gang homicide, so it's a tearful arena. I think really what the tears in this scenario came from is a hope. Working with Chief Beck, before he was chief, we have a personal relationship with him. Chief Beck, bless his heart, has been as much a frontline soldier in this fight as we have.
We're going to invite him to a meeting. When I say we, a number of civil rights leaders. We're going to interview the new chief. If we're satisfied with the answers, we will go to every city council member. We will either recommend or not recommend that the city council, in fact, ratify the appointment of Chief Beck.
Hopefully that he can get his people out there and kind of change the atmosphere that's out there now. It used to be, like when I was a child, that the policeman was who you go to. Now it's people are afraid.
That was Lita Heron, Earl Ofari Hutchinson, and Virgil Belair. Now we check in with Carlos Salcedo to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. How's it going, Carlos?
Good, all right. Thanks, Pete. Tonight on Annenberg TV News, firefighters continue to battle a series of wildfires that broke out in Diamond Bar. We talked to residents whose homes and schools are dangerously close to the fire's path. And you heard about Mayor Villaraigosa's pick for the chief of police. We'll have a live report from the first town hall meeting where the mayor plans to introduce Charlie Beck to the community. All that and much more tonight on Annenberg TV News at 6 o'clock.
Thanks, Carlos. That wraps it up for today, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Pete Griffin.